donate today. Visit redcross.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS. Your eyes are the window to your health. Schedule an eye exam to see if you're one of the 11 million Americans who has a common vision problem that can easily be corrected. Remember, healthy eyes make for a healthier you. For more information, visit nei.nih.gov/healthy eyes. A message from the National Eye Institute at the National Institutes of Health and WRCT Pittsburgh. Take a step back from the stresses of daily life and into a new genre in the dream suite. The front room plays soft jazz. Explore all the other rooms with DJ OO every Monday at 9 to 10 p.m. And check out the goodie bag, sweet treats, small plastic toys, glitter nail polish, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. For guidance through the universe of vibrations, we will be your shepherds, Sango, Thursdays at 7 p.m. on WRCT Pittsburgh. And this is An Experiment with Time on WRCT. The show airs every Saturday night at midnight. Let's get back to the music here. This is Hailu Murjia playing Endogena from his 2021 re-release to Zeta. Thank you.
listen, play, reward your grace. Often the adolescent play, reward your grace. Confuse your hunger, capture the fay.
This has been an experiment with time on WRCT Pittsburgh. Closing out with Tomas Danko Quintet from their 1972 album Jazz Message from Poland. Check out the full playlist up on WRCT.org if you've been digging the music you've been hearing. Have a great night, everyone. Take care of yourselves.
WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. My name's Anthony Cachado, and you're listening to The Angry Young Man. Well, good morning, everybody. It is an absolute pleasure to be back here in the studio with you all today at the wee hour of 9:30 in the morning. I haven't done something this early in a long time, so we're getting back into the groove of that, but just a quick heads up before we get into things. Everything that I'm about to say on this program is not necessarily representative of the views of those at WRCT, but strictly those of myself. Now, this show, for those of you who have not listened before, this is called The Angry Young Man. Now, why call it The Angry Young Man? Why sound so angry at the world, fist in the air, and, you know, things of that sort and manner? Well, to put it quite simply, there's a lot to be peeved about right now, and unfortunately, as much as I would have loved for it to be a little less peeve-inducing over the past couple months as I stepped away from this show for the summer, It got worse, because doesn't it always somehow find a way to get so much worse? Today we're just going to kind of do a little recap of the summer. You know, what wonderful, beautiful things do we now have to contend with as we enter this fall over here, as I continue to keep you in the loop about some of the things that just aren't right. So, for those of you who haven't tuned in before, this is a show where I'll either kind of sit here rambling like a madman at a inanimate object, this being the microphone, for about 30 minutes, or I'll bring in a friend or a knowledgeable individual, or who knows, maybe someone more later on this semester, just to kind of talk. Because at the end of the day, as angry as we can be about things, it's critical that we're able to sit down, kind of face-to-face, look at each other, and talk about something that we might have severe disagreement on and might feel very strongly about, but be able to walk away from that conversation or have a conversation that, you ultimately feel like you're being heard, you're being respected, and you don't even have to be, like, an expert in the field. Just, like, sit down and talk like two people going out to grab coffee. Like, that's the essence of what this is. Because, quite frankly, there's not enough of it. And I feel like this bears saying pretty often, especially on a program that has the distinct purpose of kind of bearing that message. Because just people aren't being people with each other anymore, which is unfortunate. You know, we're all angry young men and women, and those among us that are not really willing to, you know, kind of tone it down and, you know, be able to listen. But anyways, that's enough talking about that. What's been going on? Because there has been so much that has happened. I think that it bears talking about the fact that Biden dropped out of the race. This is like I'm digging this news out of its grave after it was kind of kicked to death and then buried somewhere very far away, and about 30 years later, I'm digging it up for the purpose of, like, being Frankenstein and creating this monster. But that's still kind of crazy that this happened. I mean, last season, something that definitely came up as I was talking with people was the concern surrounding the ability of the president to kind of function in that role and especially prove that he was ready to take on another 4 years. I'm not kicking a dead horse. The reason being, that man is still our president. And if we've decided to gently escort him off the stage and no longer run him for president of the United States, it still bears mentioning that that man is still in charge of many a things. Being the, you know, commander-in-chief, the president, it's, a little concerning to say the least that we've kind of forgotten about that in the midst of campaigning and campaign-related what have you. I mean, it's attractive to talk about the campaign. It's not so attractive to talk about the fact that we're potentially committing elder abuse by putting that man through the rest of his term. There's been little, if any, commentary on what's going on from the White House, as far as I've been able to see, which I may be wrong. I try to keep relatively in the loop. The one thing, though, that I did see, is this a fun topic. I'll probably like to bring someone on to talk about it at some point. Biden crawled out of the woodworks to announce the intention he has to to block the sale of U.S. steel to Nippon Steel. Now, for those of you who are unaware of this little business fiasco that's been going on, so U.S. Steel, being the steel company in the United States, and we're in Pittsburgh, we're in like the steel city, we're the heart of it all, You know, anyone with a pair of eyes and a cursory understanding of what a downtrodden city looks like in some places would know that the past has not been too kind to the steel industry in Pittsburgh. We've rebounded in many places, but there are still very much scars of that throughout the city. You have steel, U.S. Steel, which is on its last leg, kind of just limping through to the present. Between that and the union contract situation with the United Steelworkers, it's not looking too hot for U.S. Steel. In comes Nippon Steel, a Japanese-based steel company, is basically saying, you know, hey, we're willing to step in here save your butt. So that's where that was at. And then all of a sudden, the alarm bells ring. Not only for Democrats, but for Republicans, too. This is something that I've mentioned in the past, but is something that is extremely concerning, to say the least. Both parties are very, very, very wary of the idea of a foreign company investing in the United States. There is this immediate, knee-jerk reaction to say no immediately out the gate to conditions of free trade with our allies. Japan, you know, has been our close ally for many, many, many years, and is especially a closer ally now. This isn't 1944 where we're in the midst of a full-scale Pacific campaign against them. They're one of our closest partners in East Asia. I mean, we should be just fine having them invest in us, especially when the investment means saving many jobs in the United States, keeping operations within the United States, and not only saving jobs, but saving union jobs. If that's the big concern, you're keeping it just fine. You're honoring contracts with unions through this deal. I mean, there's not really too much objectionable in this deal unless you are outright objected to the idea that a foreign nation invests in our country. All this to say, so you have one of the few areas that both presidential candidates agree on, but also at the same time the current president agrees on. It's disappointing, to say the least, that we've kind of, in the popular mind, just decided free trade was no longer the direction we're going. We're going to, you know, just go full send protectionism because, you know, why, you know, if we somehow manage to, you know, free trade too much, then we destroy the domestic job industry, which is, you know, like, it, from a surface level, I get where people come from with that, but it's, there's a reason that your toaster costs $10 instead of, like, $70, and it's because it's produced somewhere where they have the ability to do so cheaply and lower your cost of living significantly. So, all this to say, there's this wonderful, fun little attitude across the entire board that we should completely forget that gains from trade are a thing and that competitive advantage is a thing. You know, let's just forget that some countries are inherently better at producing X good faster or cheaper, and attempt to do it at home. And not only are we going to make it more expensive to buy those things, but we're going to take away from our ability as a country to produce things that we're good at doing, and then inevitably lose out on the gains from exporting that across the world, and we're all worse off. Because, and I've said this to people before, the problem with looking at gains from free trade in comparison to losses from free trade is that your losses from free trade are a very tangible, small subset of people. You can think of it this way, like, if we have free trade and immediately it becomes easier for people producing, let's just say cars. Cars are a pretty good example. So it becomes cheaper to make cars in Japan or China. The auto industry loses 20,000 jobs in Bend, Idaho? Is that? No, it's not Idaho. It's one of the I's. Indiana? Mayor Pete's from there. South Bend. Anyways, so you have this loss of jobs of like 20,000 people. And these 20,000 people, you know, obviously that's a tragedy. But 20,000 people lost their job, and then pretty much the entire rest of the country just received a discounting to their cost of living, which means that it's easier for someone now to, you know, take a day off here or there and spend more time with their family, or save up to buy a nicer house or a nicer car, or go on vacation, stuff like that. You have very dispersed benefits that come from the free trade, as opposed to a very concentrated loss that, you know, is just easier to see. You know, it's very hard to visualize for the average person the benefit of, you know, everything costs $10 less now for you on average. You know, your whole basket of goods is now $10 less than it was last year or 5 years ago. You know, that's, I mean, yes, it's tangible, but it's a little less tangible than seeing 20,000 people rioting outside of Mayor Pete's mayoral hall in South Bend saying they want their jobs back. So that's the problem there. I'm concerned that what used to be the consensus on free trade up until about the 2010s is a thing of the past. The reason being, you know, we're already getting hammered by the cost of living on other fronts. I mean, it doesn't take more than maybe about a 10-second scroll on Zillow to want to gouge out your eyeballs and forget that the housing market is a thing, because you will never be able to afford a house as a young person at this rate. Or even if you can, it will be extremely painful to buy one. So, I mean, the cost of that end of living is ridiculous. The cost of farm goods, to begin with, eggs, milk, basics, staple goods are up. A lot of that has to do with the upward pressure on prices from inflation. That's a whole thing in of itself. I mean, you know, obviously we're not feeling 2022 levels of inflationary pressure right now, but we haven't exactly rectified many of the root causes there. So, you know, isn't it a wonderful thing to realize how kind of screwed we are in some ways as a young generation financially? And all this to say that it isn't exactly helping that we're increasing the cost of living on imported goods by becoming increasingly protectionist. But here's a fun little segue into some stuff going on I'd like to elaborate more on at another point, going into the issues regarding some policy proposals from the Harris-Walz campaign. That policy list dropped in full, I believe it was either yesterday or 2 days ago. And, you know, we knew some of these things already just because of the scattered tweet here or remark made at a speech there. The big objectionable stuff I've spoken about before, firstly, price controls and how well that's worked for countries like Argentina and Venezuela. Not well is the answer. but I do want to say before we get into that, I do have a couple things I need to let you guys know about. Just in my capacity as Mr. Member of WRCT over here. Firstly, I just want to let you know a little bit about a an organization called Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Greater Pittsburgh. Who brought you a little magic in your life growing up? Who took you to your first ball game? Who showed you how to find the North Star? Who made you laugh so hard your stomach hurt? This time, become the one who makes magic happen for a young person by becoming a big sister or a big brother. Being a big brother or big sister is something that almost anyone can do. Just be a friend to a child who needs one. Have fun together. Learn from each other. Help a child discover these little moments that are so magical for a young person, and you will both be forever changed by the experience. Call Big Brothers Big Sisters to learn more about their varied and flexible mentoring opportunities at 412-363-6100. That's 412-363-6100, or visit them online at www.BBSPGH.org. That was BBSPGH.org. Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Little Moments, Big Magic. Also, just gonna let you know very quickly, also, in addition, you know, how many little segue words could I put there? WRCT is supported by Sidecar Bakery in North Oakland. Sidecar is an independent coffee shop with a full bar, ready-made breakfast sandwiches, breakfast pastries, savory hand pies, cakes, and pies made in the bakery next door. Sidecar offers a place to study, eat, and hang with friends in a cafe setting. Open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday. For more information, visit their website at sidecar412.com. If you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Well, anyways, after that little brief interlude there, let's hop back into the saddle for a second in these last 10 minutes I got with you. So, yeah, price controls, why are they a bad thing? Well, let's look at it this way. There's a certain point, there's a certain amount of demand for, let's say, I'll use pizza. Pizza's a fun one. There's a certain amount for pizza in the world. Well, let's say the United States. There's a certain amount of demand for pizza in the United States. There's only so many people who can supply pizza in the United States. And at a certain point, the amount that they're going to produce and the demand that there is for pizza is going to intersect on a graph. And that's what we call the kind of like optimal point for pricing or production. Because you'll produce just enough pizza to meet all the demand for the pizza. And that price, whatever price that ends up being, is the price that it's best to sell pizza at. The government might say, well, you're selling pizza for too much. Nobody is able to afford pizza because you're charging too much for pizza. Let's cut back the price of pizza. We're going to ask you, instead of selling a 12-inch, 16-inch pie for $20. You're selling it for $15 now. Have fun. Now, what that does is that artificially restrains the amount that you could sell it for, yes, which means that you're going to pull it below the price, but if you're still going to, you're still going to have the same amount of demand, the same amount of supply. What ends up happening is you have a lot more people that want to buy it at that price, but it's not worth it to produce more at that point. As a matter of fact, at that price, you're going to want to produce less. So what you end up with is the double whammy of more people want it because it's cheaper, but less producers able to make less. So what does that end up looking like? It ends up looking like empty shelves at grocery stores. It ends up looking like empty display cases at the pizzeria. And I'll tell you, there's nothing more sad than walking into a pizzeria just as they're closing and all of the pizzas off the counter, and you're left with the option of that very weird slice that nobody orders, or absolutely nothing. That is the unfortunate result of price controls. We'll go into that a little more at a later time with someone in a more engaging conversation than me kind of yapping at the mic. But another wonderful thing to consider is, in a similar vein, the down payment assistance in the Harris-Walz plan for first-time homebuyers. What could possibly go wrong when you subsidize demand? I'll tell you exactly what goes wrong. If people are able to pay more, they are going to, on average, be able to buy the thing. And that's going to increase the demand. By subsidizing demand, the amount of demand will increase. And oftentimes, sometimes supply is able to catch up. But even if supply doesn't catch up, if either of the two happens, it's likely that you're going to end up with a higher price point, because they know now that they can charge a higher price point. So you end up with higher costs by subsidizing demand. Also not good. You are, in both of those proposals, making it significantly worse by trying to solve the problem. What's the moral of the story there? More government is not necessarily a good thing. In many cases, and actually quite a few, less government is where you're looking for the solution. That is a kind of a staple message of the angry young man. In whatever I'll talk about, it somehow finds its way to land back there. But that's what you get when you put a small L libertarian on the radio. all this to say, there's a lot going on right now. I'm excited to kind of see how things develop as we go further into this year, because, you know, we're in the midst of a interesting election, one in which we're going to definitely see some things to be angry about. Some very stupid things will be said. I doubt that much of wisdom will be said in this cycle, which is unfortunate how far we've lowered the bar. Something to be angry about. Who knows? But, we're looking at maybe the potential to have a call-in option. That would be something I would like to do if I could figure out the logistics on it. Might need to get a producer in the room with me, because you just have me finagling the little sliders here to make this happen today. But if we can get a producer, who knows? Maybe we can do some call-in, you know, like get you guys in the mix. What do you think about what's going on? You're also free to have a chat with me afterwards, not on the air, if you'd like to. If you heard something objectionable, if you'd like to suggest something that we speak about in the future, by all means. This is why we call it Freeform Radio. You could call us over here at 412-268-9728. Again, 412-268-9728. Or if you like letters, you can call 412-CMU-WRCT. Again, 412-CMU-WRCT. If you happen to be hearing this when it's airing on Thursday, I have very bad news. I am not currently in the station. I am somewhere, probably asleep, because it's going to be airing sometime around 8:30 on Thursday. And if I don't have anything to do before 9 o'clock, it's likely I will not be awake before then. So you will be calling an empty station. I'm very sorry to report that, but feel free to call now after the show. you know, always appreciate a good talk. It doesn't have to be on the air. Anyways, all this to say, we're looking at like, I don't know, three-ish minutes left on the clock. What are some other things we may address this season? I think that it would be worth talking about again, potentially just general topics, not necessarily stuff that's of crazy relevance. I know that we're definitely going to have a return talk on the market environmentalism topic. The person I spoke to about that has some revisions to make to their statements, so we will revisit that topic. I believe we're definitely going to find ourselves talking about some of the third-party candidates, seeing what's going on there, especially with actually, funny little story for those of you not in the loop. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, was filing to put her name on the ballot in Nevada. Now, what happened was the Nevada Secretary of State either intentionally or unintentionally gave them the paperwork to file for a petition to put a referendum on the ballot. So they did all the paperwork. They got the signatures, submitted it. It turns out what they submitted was the paperwork to question Jill Stein, and you either voted yes or no. The implications of such a referendum would be interesting. I wonder what happens when 80% of Nevada votes no on Jill Stein. Seems like there's a rather insidious sort of outcome to that. But anyways, all of this to say, welcome back to The Angry Young Man. We're going to continue going at it every Tuesday at 9:30. We're going to talk, and we're going to talk about the things that aren't necessarily getting the coverage, and maybe some of the stuff that's getting the coverage. We're going to have fun while we're at it. We're going to, you know, hopefully keep it cool, keep it going, you know. This is the fun stuff. I have a lot of fun stuff on the pipeline for you, some fun surprise stuff we might get further down the line. Who knows? But it was a pleasure to be back with you all today. I'll see you all sometime next week. Hope you all have a wonderful, spectacular rest of your Tuesday or Thursday, depending on when you're listening. And we'll speak further soon. You all take care and have a blessed rest of your day.
You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Armando Rayo, host of the Tacos of Texas podcast. Season 4, El Cuatro, is done. This season, we talked about vaquero culture, went inside HEB's Mi Tienda, and talked about the staples of border food culture. If you're looking for something to listen to over the holidays, you can listen to all the episodes of the Tacos of Texas podcast on KUT.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
First off, what I wanted to be on, I mean, it's Shark Tank. You know, it's the Super Bowl of being an entrepreneur. Okay. Everybody wants to be on Shark Tank. Millions of people see your business. It blows up your brand. It makes you feel more official. And it's also just good for your company. People buy your stuff. They download your app. They recognize you and become a brand in yourself. And I always felt like growing up watching the show, I felt like I would kill it in that. I'm confident. I love to talk. And I'm witty. And I always knew as a kid I wanted to be on it. And then, 16 years old, I told my mom, I'm going to be on this show. And when I am, I'm going to bring you on it with me. And so, flash forward a decade. I was 16, I'm 26 now. Flash forward a decade. Funny enough, this is another thing that people don't know. I didn't even apply to be on Shark Tank. Somebody from Shark Tank reached out to me.
Dustin G. Bell, co-founder and CEO of Cardio. Bell was recently featured in the first episode of season 16 of the ABC TV hit show Shark Tank to promote his fitness app. Cardio is a gamified movement app turning outdoor cardio into a community-based game of team turf war. Users can join or form a team and claim or steal an area of town they walk, run, or bike through from other players in their city, all while still tracking stats like miles, pace, distance, and calories burned. As a child growing up in Louisville, Kentucky, Bell knew three things. He was broke, he wanted to make money, and he had a problem with authority. These three things led him down the path into entrepreneurship, starting with selling candy at school at age 11 and graduating from the University of Kentucky with a degree in marketing in May of 2020. I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, the Cardio Fitness app with co-founder and CEO Dustin G. Bell in Black America.
I didn't expect to get a deal, or if I did, I didn't think it was going to be a deal I liked or from a shark that I wanted. So I wanted to just make sure that no matter what happens, we're just going to air. The episode is going to make it to TV. And then the second was, of course, to get a deal. You know, I want a deal. I want good terms. I want to be sharks who can be valuable to the company. And then the third one was get my mom to be on TV with me, which I don't know if we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but I was able to finesse that one at the end. But, you know, they're way more important than just the money that they got. And I mean, even off of that, I've had so many people reach out to me independently. I've had people who wanted me to do speaking engagements and gigs, talk to their students, mentor them. I've had people, you know, pay for me to do those things, which has never happened to me before. And then on top of that, you know, for the business, it was great. You know, we got thousands of downloads within a day.
With limited job opportunities after graduating from the University of Kentucky during the pandemic, Dustin G. Bell found himself sleeping on the couch in his father's attic and losing motivation to work out or engage in outdoor cardio. During this time, he came up with an idea for a fitness software. After reflecting on how Pokemon Go gained popularity and demonstrated that those who would not have normally been outside were more willing to do so in a gamified way. Fast forward, he decided to pack up his belongings and move to Austin, Texas, without a job, family, or place to stay. Bell was recently featured in the first episode of season 16 of Shark Tank. He asked the Sharks for $150,000 in exchange for 5% equity in his company, valued it at $3 million. He secured a deal for $150,000 in exchange for 15% equity in his company. Of course, after this episode aired, the company gained a lot of attention and more people started using the Cardio app. In Black America recently spoke with Dustin G. Bell in studio.
Well, you know, from a young age, I always knew that I liked where I lived. But it was mostly because of the people I was there with. You know, my family, my friends, all my childhood memories are from there. But as I got older, I realized that the things I want to do in my life, they're really not the place. They're not going to happen here at the level I want them to. You know, Kentucky is known for bluegrass, bourbon, horses, Mitch McConnell. A lot of things that aren't really my thing. So I figured, you know, eventually at some point I want to move to a place that's a little bit more opportunistic for what I want to do in my life. And, you know, that ended up being Austin. Obviously, I love living here. And Louisville was cool, you know. Young. In my youth, anyway. I'm still young. Some people would say I feel old. Just spent a lot of time playing sports, hanging out with family, friends. And, yeah, I can't really complain too much. It made me the man I am today. But, yeah. You know, grateful to be in Texas now.
So how did you select the University of Kentucky to attend college?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I selected them because they gave me the most scholarship money.
Okay.
But beyond that, I knew I wanted to get out of Louisville. I lived there my whole life, like I said. And I always knew I wanted to expand my horizons. And, you know, an hour down the road isn't that far of an expansion. But it was at least something. At that point, I lived in Louisville my whole life. I never lived anywhere else. It was the first time I lived outside of Louisville for an extended period of time. And the University of Kentucky has been very kind to me. They've been some of my biggest partners, investors. Most of my mentors, a lot of my friends who I still hang out with to this day went there with me. So, I mean, it was a great college. I appreciate and I love my time there, and I think of it very highly and favorably still.
What were some of your favorite subjects while you're at the University of Kentucky?
You know, that's a hard question to answer because I didn't go to a lot of class. I did the bare minimum to make sure I didn't lose my scholarship. I was more interested in the extracurricular things like clubs and networking events and business opportunities and stuff like that outside of class. But I'm a marketing guy, so I really enjoyed some of my marketing classes. I love doing sales exercises and competitions and classes that really got to dive into tangible skills. I've never been good with classes where you're just told to remember terms and then hopefully on the exam you fill in the right bubble on the Scantron for the definition of that abbreviation. That's never been interesting to me, but something where I can do actual tangible activities that I can see having, you know, follow through into my adult life when I actually start working and trying to build a career. Those are the kind of classes that stuck with me the most.
When did you develop the mindset that you wanted to be an entrepreneur?
I knew from the get-go. I remember my mom told me when I was 5 years old, I would take my old toys and I would try to flip them to the neighborhood kids. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were flipping toys at 5 years old. People, once I was done with my Spider-Man toys, I figured I'd sell it to somebody else. I didn't really understand market dynamics that much. I was trying to sell toys. You could get retail for like $15 for 50. So it didn't work that well. But I always had this desire to try to find a dollar out of an activity. When I got into middle school and high school, you know, the usual things kids do, shoveling snow, cutting grass, selling candy, a whole bunch of things. They even used to ghostwrite people's essays and their English homework and stuff like that because I was a good writer and I knew people didn't enjoy it and they